And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Welcome to the NBA Daily Ding on the Athletic NBA Show.
Who could have switched him? That's why they keep sending Shamit up there. This is the matchup he wants right here. Look at the handle. That's what he wants. Look at the score. Foul. Cut it. And he's having words for the Mavericks bench. He's looking at them all. Tim Hardaway Jr., Boban. He's even looking at Jason Kidd.
Ding, ding. How about we can just watch basketball?
I like that idea.
Welcome to the Daily Ding. I'm your host, Andrew Schlecht, and with me tonight, it's my guy, Law Murray. Law, what's up, man?
What's up, man? I feel good. How you feel?
Man, I'm good. We got playoff basketball going on. The Heat just absolutely dismantle this 76ers team, 119-103. In Miami, the Heat go up 2-0 on the 76ers without Joel Embiid. I'll say this. Before we just light up the Sixers, I love the way that Tyrese Maxey played tonight.
And can we get him some help?
And Tobias Harris. Both those guys were phenomenal tonight. Maxey's zipping up and down the court. I thought after the first quarter, I thought, man, is he going to be able to play with the same intensity the whole game? The answer was absolutely yes. And he continued to push the whole game. He and Tobias Harris in the second half combined 13 of 17 from the field, 76% from the field, and yet they still get blown out, and it's because there's really nobody else around them contributing at a high level.
I mean, you said it, man. Those guys were 13 of 17 from the field, and they also made 13 out of the 17 second half field goals for the Sixers overall. Who might be missing from that equation? You know,
let me tell you, in the second half, James Harden took 5 shots, 0 of 3 in the fourth quarter, 1 of 2 in the third quarter.
And it was similar in game one.
Yeah.
James made one basket in the second half of game one. And so we all know what it is. I think James can maybe start the game knowing what he wants to do. He'll facilitate. He'll understand and diagnose. But even if he starts getting a spurt where he can put his head down and find some offense, James just has the kind of game where it's heavily reliant on the free throw line and the step back three. There's nothing in between, and he's going to get off the ball sometimes to his detriment. And so while you're looking at Tobias being extremely professional out there, while you're looking at Tyrese Maxey justify why the Sixers were fortunate to get him where they got him in the early 20s of that draft. I mean, James just, he doesn't have the extra gear, and he never really had the diversity in his game to take whatever the defense has given him. Because right now, James is perfectly fine letting Tyrese do his thing, but James isn't able to kind of lift himself up and get himself going once he stops. And that's before you get to the bigger issues, in my opinion, which is what Miami's offense is doing to these dudes.
Yeah. And credit to Miami's defense. They figured out pretty quick that all they needed to do was just single cover James and then just play him for the pass. Because early on, he was throwing some lobs. He threw a couple lobs to DeAndre. He was finding other guys. But then they just started playing him for the pass. And it was just about over because the Heat were fantastic. Bam Adebayo was incredible. I mean, he's catching oops. He's throwing oops. It was just such a fun night. And the difference maker and a guy that could make a major impact not only in this series but in the next series is Victor Oladipo, who looked really good tonight, not only offensively but defensively, what he was able to do. I mean, James can't turn the corner really on anybody, but if you can't turn the corner on this version of Victor Oladipo, like, you're in trouble. And credit to Vic, like, all the credit to Vic. Played 30 minutes off the bench, 6 of 11 from the field, 19 points, 6 boards. I thought he was phenomenal tonight.
Andrew, you ever play basketball on your birthday before?
Yes.
Yeah, that energy is different, right? Victor Oladipo turned 30 years old, and, you know, you just got to beware. If you plan a dude on his birthday, you either going to get his very best or you're going to get something where he at least going to have a story. You know, maybe a little bit too much the night before, or you got plans the night after, maybe both. Victor was ready to play. He was ready to play. We saw in the Hawks series, he got on the floor because of his defense, because they couldn't have Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson playing together, especially with Kyle Lowry dealing with a hamstring and not being able to play. They had a spot. Gabe Vincent was going to start. Shout out to Gabe Vincent, because Gabe Vincent's out here sliding into the starting lineup, and we're not even really talking about that. Like, he just looks like he belongs, right? Mm-hmm. Just the number one seed in the East. But then Victor, he got going. He got in rhythm because of the things that he was doing off the ball and on the defensive end of the floor, and being able to rebound from the guard, the wing position. Now he's rounding into form because he's played consistent basketball for a good week or so. And that's how you get 19 points off the bench, which was one more than the sixth man of the year Tyler Hero had. And oh, by the way, Philadelphia's depth is in shambles because the entire 76ers bench had 19 points in this game. Yeah. And so that's the issue with Philadelphia, is even if you get Joel Embiid back, who is going to be playing with a bad thumb and a broken face, even if you get him back, that just means you're completely eliminating the DeAndre Jordan minutes. So you're not getting anything extra from there. Paul Reed is going to play, but obviously the concern with him is the fouls. That wasn't as big an issue in game two. It was George Niang who couldn't stay out of foul trouble, which was a shame, because the only real success that the 76ers had in game two were the 10 minutes or so that George Niang was able to be out there and spread that Miami Heat defense out some. That's a concern. And then no one else is a bucket. Danny Green's has completely ran out of three-pointers. And when you add that on to whatever struggles James has after halftime, when you add that on to the fact that Miami is just getting to every loose ball, getting to these offensive rebounds and scoring consistently off of those, I mean, there's not a lot of hope for Philadelphia except the fact that you don't need to talk about being up 3-1 in a series anymore because you're down 2-0.
Right. Yeah, that's the problem, is that they don't have anybody else. Like, what are they going to dust off Shake Milton for this series? Like, I don't see that happening. And Joel Embiid has to be otherworldly for them to have a shot. And we're talking about a game where, like, Tyrese Maxey played really well, like the top of his game, 34 points on 22 shots. You got a 21-point night from Tobias Harris, 4 boards, 4 assists, 4 steals from Tobias Harris. And you're just not even close.
Yeah, you know, they dusted off Furkan Korkmaz. He's the only guy who can consistently hit a three, it seems like.
Yep.
You know, that's the other problem that Philadelphia is having. Their perimeter offense, it was as bad as it's ever been in game one as far as the threes. I think they shot like 17% in game one, 6 made threes or something like that. That marginally improved in game two. They're still under 30%. So that's too many issues. And yeah, Joel Embiid was an MVP finalist for a reason. But you're not getting peak Embiid anyway, okay? And even if you were, there are way too many issues going on. And, oh, yeah, maybe Miami might be able to slide in Kyle Lowry, who, you know, where is he from, Andrew?
He's from Philly. Here we go.
You know, he might have some gas for game three.
And not only that, Jimmy back in Philly. I mean, it's going to be really interesting. That crowd is going to be, they're going to be heated for a lot of reasons. And yeah, I mean, we look at this Heat team and they're just rolling. But they've been doing this all season. They have been prepared for this all season because they have had to roll with different lineups the entire way. And you put Gabe Benson in the starting lineup, no problem. You put Max Strus in the starting lineup, no problem. You're rolling with Victor Oladipo as basically your seventh man. Great. Let's go. And then when you get to the 76ers, the whole season it's been Joel or bust. And, you know, they traded for James Harden. He has not been the guy that they thought he would be. Whether that's a hamstring problem or whatever the issue may be, hopefully that gets corrected because I don't want to watch this version of James Harden anymore. Hopefully he gets back, especially with the kind of contract that he's in line for. They're going to have a better version of that, of James Harden going into next season. But this is just a credit to the Heat, Eric Spoelstra, the front office, everything that they have done to prepare for this moment. They've got guys lined up that are ready to play, and then you look across the other bench and they're just kind of shrugging their shoulders waiting for their MVP.
Yeah, man. And you know, you bring up Eric Spoelstra. We brought up Gabe Benson earlier, but another guy, Max Strus, has basically taken Duncan Robinson completely out of the rotation. Like Max Strus is starting, and we're just looking at the team being like, "Yep, Miami Heat." It's who we come to look at. Like Heat culture, it can be something that you snicker at. You know, you can be, you know, whatever. But this is real. This 2-0 lead, it's because they have a dozen guys who can look like NBA players out there. And just another point to make, Udonis Haslem, he's on the roster, and it's like he doesn't play, but it's like, if you have a guy like him on your bench in uniform and you got to look at him, it's different. Jimmy Butler, Eric Spoelstra hasn't, they got into it right in that regular season game, but you don't, there ain't, everybody's on the same page in the playoffs because of the level of accountability. I hate to be so negative for Philly, man. It's like, it's only 2-0 and Miami, right, you did what they're supposed to, but I don't have any reason to think that the Philly can, let's just put it this way, like, can they win the series? No.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, it was reported tonight that Joel can't even look at his phone screen because it hurts his head so bad. So he's got a ways to go. If he's gonna play on Friday, it's gonna be through pain. And he was already a diminished version of himself with the thumb. And so you're just taking more and more away from this guy. I feel really bad for him because, you know, it's just these kind of random injuries that he's getting. It's not even the knee. It's not even like a foot injury. It's just complete bad luck on his part. And it's a shame because what you want to see, and even Jimmy Butler talked about this post game, like what you want to see is Embiid against the Heat because that's a series. Like that's absolutely a series. But without him, they're not going to get a series. Let's move on to some news. The Athletic's own Shams Charania reports that Brooklyn Nets guard Ben Simmons will undergo surgery on his back on Thursday. He's expected to miss 3 to 4 months, but should have a full recovery well ahead of training camp. Thoughts?
You know, it's actually a really seamless transition because we're obviously talking about the Sixers. We're talking about Harden and the fact that, you know, Harden could make this $46 million. He just has to opt in or whatever. But why'd they have Harden on the team? Because Ben Simmons, who last played in game 7 for the 76ers in the semifinals against the Hawks last year, he wasn't able to play all year, whether it was physical, mental, the relationship with the coach, organization, team, what have you. And you just have to wish Ben well at this point because there are so many factors of him returning to play. And now we see how much of the health part of it is at the forefront of his return to play, the timeline and everything. Everything else might follow after that. But the only time that Joel Embiid did not have an injury in the playoffs during this 5-year run the Sixers have been on was in the bubble in 2020. And that was the year that not only did Ben miss the playoffs because of a knee subluxation, but before the pandemic started, he had the serious back issues that cropped up that winter.
Yep.
So this is going back years. And so you just hope that a guy who was the number one pick in the 2016 draft, as young as he is, has whatever is left on his contract, 3 years or whatever. You just hope that he can regain his career and be the player that we think that he can be, and that he can be happy and just mentally focused doing it. And that's a lot of hurdles to overcome. And you just got to feel for him. And that's all there is for me to say about that one.
Yeah. Back injuries are scary. You just hope that you get to see Ben Simmons back on the court, because like the fully actualized version of Ben Simmons is a really fun basketball player. And so wish him all the best.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
The Phoenix Suns, holy smokes. They beat the Mavs 129-109. They hit a gear in the fourth quarter that it absolutely blew my mind. They outscored the Mavs 40-26 in the fourth, and it was over fast. It ballooned up to a 20-point game in what felt like 10 seconds. It was insane.
Hey, those 10 seconds was right when Spencer Dinwiddie checked in for Kleyba, and they went to that lineup. And what was funny about that, Andrew, is you saw game one, right? Phoenix outclassed Dallas for most of that game. But the fourth quarter, Dallas thought they found something, and they kind of made a little run at the end, gave, you know what they say on at the end of these games. Oh, they gave them something to think about for the next game, right?
Right.
So when you win by that much, but you had that kind of ending, like usually it's hard to be like, all right, like we need to do this better. We need to do that better. I mean, teams might coach speak their way through it in the post game session, but in reality, it's kind of hard to lock in like that, especially if Chris Paul isn't on your team. But in this case, we all know the maniac that Chris Paul is when it comes to attention to detail and focus for these possessions, whatever. I believe that the way that game one ended, if there was one thing Phoenix was like, we're absolutely going to improve on for game two, it was they were going to be ready for that lineup. And it was already getting away from Dallas by the time they called that timeout and got Dinwiddie in the game with Luka, Jalen Brunson, Dorian Finney-Smith, Reggie Bullock, right? It was already kind of getting away from them. Chris immediately goes on a 7. They go on a 7-0 run, and they get – and they spanked that lineup so bad that they had to put Dwight Powell back into the game. And Dwight Powell has been a mark this whole series.
So true. Yeah. Just a brutal third quarter for Luka Doncic. And a brutal second half for like the trio of Luka, Brunson, Dinwiddie. They went 6-20 in the second half as a trio. And then you had Chris Paul, Booker, and Bridges go 18-24. And not only that, Chris Paul went 9-10. In the second half, and was absolutely cooking Luka Doncic, calling for it, getting the right switch, and then he would just go to work. And this is a guy, he's almost 14 years older than Luka, which is just wild. Chris Paul turns 37 on Friday, and we're talking about him cooking this 23-year-old and just making him look, I mean, it made him look foolish. And you wonder, if you're a Mavs fan, to me, you have to wonder about the starts that Luka's having, because he's expending a ton of energy. There's a play where he puts maybe 7 or 8 moves on Cam Johnson getting to the rim. And you're like, that's really cool. But like, are you going to have that same kind of energy come the fourth quarter? And he just clearly did not.
Yeah. On both ends of the floor. That was an and one. That was a great move.
It was cool. It was awesome. I mean, yeah. You can go look. It's like on the front page of NBA Reddit right now. It's very, very cool.
But I think that, first of all, Dallas played better in the first half when Luka went to the bench to start that second quarter, man.
Yeah.
I mean, Spencer Dinwiddie was like, all right, I'm unlocked. Like, Spencer got it going. Jalen Brunson, he got in foul trouble. That took him out of rhythm early. And yeah, Luka actually was trying to get his guys involved. That looked good for a while, but the issue there was Phoenix's offense. DeAndre Ayton, he got going again because DeAndre is just trucking Dwight Powell. But yeah. Phoenix didn't get anything out of DeAndre Ayton because of his own foul trouble. Like, Ayton didn't score after the first quarter. Like, mm-hmm. I thought after the way the Mavericks played with Luka off the floor in that second quarter, getting the lead, and then Luka hitting those threes, measuring his step back, having a halftime lead, I was like, Dallas is in good shape. Because, again, we all knew they were going to go small at some point, and they were already taking Ayton out the game. Booker took a while to get going. And the bench, Phoenix's bench, was just terrible, except for Bismack Biyombo, because, of course, Bismack Biyombo shows up and fits right into this series with Dallas. you know Dallas, man. Dallas is fouling hard, you know, absolutely trying to break the code. Steve Kerr getting ready to call those dudes out. You know what I'm saying? Like, they bring a different level of physicality. Jason Kidd don't play. Jason Kidd, he'll whisper at a press conference, and then he'll come in and to the locker room. You know exactly what he's telling these dudes to do. That dude from Oakland, you already know. But Mikal Bridges, he turned the series around because he made sure that Luka wasn't going to cook anybody off the switches. He fought through all those screens, stayed in front of him, frustrated him. They didn't let the Luka playmaker game get going as far as getting guys easy shots and whatnot. Luka had 1 assist after halftime, 4 turnovers. And Mikal Bridges was just there. That dude wore Luka Doncic like a Mavericks jersey tonight.
That and another interesting performance was from the officials. There was a stretch in the first half where there were 4 offensive fouls called in the span of 2 minutes. And they were all just like these really emotional charges. And then I did not like this. There was a technical foul called on Jay Crowder. He just walked by Luka, talked a little bit of trash to him. Like, this is the playoffs. Like, this is what this is about. And he gets teed up. I don't know. There seemed to be a little bit of performance going on with those guys in the first half.
Oh yeah, and that was the other part of it. You just was like, oh, they're gonna rile Luka Doncic up. But the Phoenix Suns, they kind of, you know, they are made for this series, man. I mean, they just have too many guys where it's like you think that they're going to lose control, but then you recognize, wait, these dudes are just always here. Every damn team Jay Crowder's been on has a bunch of goons on it. And some of those goons are really good players, so I shouldn't even call them goons, right?
Right.
Jay's going to do his thing, but then it's like a bunch of dudes who is like legitimately you don't want to step to. Like, again, Chris Paul is on this team. Chris Paul, like former president Chris Paul, elder statesman Chris Paul's on his team. Mm-hmm. They're gonna have his own NBA library, or and whatnot. Like, you can't get over on a team like that, generally speaking. And Monty's chill. Like, it's not like Chris Paul and Doc Rivers, where it's like, God bless those guys, like, entertaining team. I'm very familiar with them, but those two's always got on the referees' nerves, because all of them would all, there was no counter, there was no complimentary forces there. Monty is super chill, so whatever crap is being talked on the court, Monty's just over there stoic as ever, and the team takes on that persona too. That's why this team goes in every damn fourth quarter with a lead, and they haven't lost a damn game yet all year. They just know what they want to do. that's the difference for Dallas in this series. They might come out thinking we're just going to be more physical. Y'all in a different series now, and we about to see what that energy going to be like. We just got finished talking about birthdays, Andrew. You brought up Chris Paul's age if you want to. That's a birthday game for Chris Paul. I can't wait to see what that's going to be like Friday night.
That's exactly right. That is a birthday game. Watch out. And, you know, he had an amazing fourth quarter. He was hitting everything in the mid-range. He manufactured that foul on Jalen Brunson around half court that was just only about Chris Paul. Like, poor Jalen Brunson is just standing there just trying to exist, just trying to dribble the basketball. And then Chris just turns his arm into somehow like he gets a foul call, which is just, it's just one of those moments where like that's only Chris Paul.
Looked right at Tony Brothers after that too.
He did. Patted him on the back. Ran by him, said it's my birthday on Friday. All right, thanks so much for listening to the Daily Ding. That's going to do it for today's show. Point of Contention is next. Law, send us out.
Ding, ding.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.